has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode 520. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Well, coming up, we have our National League Cy Young and MVP winners, and the Phillies went 1-for-2. They finished 500 in the award voting, which I think only makes sense given how things went this year. So we'll get into the award winners. Bryce Harper, the National League MVP. Zach Wheeler, your Cy Young runner-up in a razor-close, razor-thin vote, and we'll go into some of the arguments that are being made about that Cy Young race between Wheeler and the winner Corbin Burnes, and also talk about Bryce Harper's incredible 2021 season and some of the history that he's making in a Phillies uniform. We'll do that coming up here in a very shortened version of Hittin' Season over the next 15 or 20 minutes or so. But let's dive into the big news, of course, and that is that Bryce Harper is your National League MVP. What a season Bryce Harper had.
You know, this year was tough, you know, starting off, you know, getting hit in the face. It was definitely a tough couple days for me, tough couple weeks for me, trying to get back. And was able to get back, you know. My teammates were incredible throughout the whole process of trying to get me back and things like that. And, you know, I got to thank, you know, my teammates, the city of Philadelphia, our fans.
Perhaps one of the five best offensive seasons in Phillies history. You look at what he did after the All-Star break, and I've mentioned this statistic in a couple of different places. It was a statistic Jason Stark had in his preview piece that came out back in October when he was looking at MVP candidates. He noted that Bryce Harper had an OPS over 1,100 in the second half, while the rest of the Phillies had an OPS in the 680s, and it was 683. In the second half, Bryce Harper hit .338 with a .476 on base and a .713 slugging percentage. That's the best OPS in baseball. The Phillies, as a team other than him, hit .228, .300, .386 over that span. So when you talk about a player who strapped a team on his back, the Phillies had no business being in contention for the National League East. Bryce Harper made it possible. They didn't get there, but it's only through Bryce Harper's play. It's only because he did like what Ryan Howard used to do back in 06 and 07 and 08, put the team on his back on those ridiculous second half stretch runs. And in August and September, Bryce Harper was just unstoppable until teams just basically stopped pitching to him. And his on-base percentage, I think, was over 500 in his last 25 games. He is one of just a handful of players to win multiple MVP awards before turning 30 during the wildcard era. It's just Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, and Juan Gonzalez. Players to win MVP awards with multiple franchises. Since the Baseball Writers Association of America began voting in 1931, Bryce Harper with the Nationals and Phillies, Frank Robinson with the Reds and the Orioles, Barry Bonds with the Pirates and Giants, Alex Rodriguez with the Rangers and Yankees, and Jimmy Fox with the A's and Red Sox. So one of just five players to win multiple MVP awards with multiple franchises. I mean, that's something else. I mean, think about that list. It's just, that's pretty incredible. Since joining the Phillies, Bryce Harper has hit .281, has gotten on base at a .402 clip and slugged .556. Okay? Since joining the Phillies, for the last 3 years, those are Bryce Harper's numbers. Just incredible. Now let's give you a list of players who have won two MVPs before turning 29. This is per Elias. Ernie Banks, Johnny Bench, Barry Bonds, Joe DiMaggio, Jimmy Fox, Juan Gonzalez. Forget how good Juan Gonzalez was. Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, Dale Murphy, Stan Musial, Hal Newhouser, Albert Pujols, Frank Thomas, Mike Trout, Bryce Harper. Guess what almost all those guys have in common? They're all Hall of Famers, with the exception of Dale Murphy, who I think should be in the Hall of Fame personally. Barry Bonds obviously should be in the Hall of Fame, but he's not there. But Juan Gonzalez, all those guys, Hall of Fame caliber players. You look at some of the other big stats to come out of this thing here. In the history of baseball, only one player had ever won an MVP award for two different teams before turning 30. Barry Bonds. Bryce Harper joins him in that list today. Because you think about it, a player under 30 generally doesn't... If you were an MVP when you were like 25 or 24, whatever it is, often that team doesn't let you go. But then to go win another MVP for another team before you turn 30 is just a ridiculously difficult thing to do. And Bryce Harper, Barry Bonds are the only ones to do it. So the vote in the National League MVP race was not all that close. Bryce Harper took home 17 first-place votes. Juan Soto got 6 first-place votes. Brandon Crawford actually finished with 4 first-place votes. That's the third most. While Fernando Tatis Jr. got 2 first-place votes, somebody gave Trey Turner a first-place vote. As far as the overall point totals go, Bryce Harper finished with 348 points. He got 17 first-place, 9 second-place, 2/3, 1/4, and 1/5. Juan Soto comes in second at 274, followed by Tatis Jr. at 244. Crawford finished with 213, a better showing than I thought he was going to get. And then Trey Turner rounds out the pack with 185. You're looking down ballot. Only one other Philly managed to get some down ballot votes. Zach Wheeler got himself an 8th place vote, a 9th place vote, and a 10th place vote for 6 MVP votes and 6 MVP points. And that's the extent of your Phillies who received MVP votes this year. But you know, this was the right call. You know, this was the right decision, and I think we all felt that this was coming. I think when we found out that Mike Schmidt was going to make the announcement, I think that made it all the more likely that it was going to be Bryce Harper, because otherwise, why would you have Mike Schmidt give it to Juan Soto? You know, clearly Major League Baseball, they knew who, you know, they obviously knew who won, and so they set this up to make it a very cool thing. And now Bryce Harper joins a very exclusive list of Philadelphia Phillies to win an MVP award. He joins Jimmy Rollins, the last player to do it, who won it in 2007. Ryan Howard did it in 2006. You have Mike Schmidt, who did it 3 times in 1986, 1981, and 1980. Jim Constanti, the relief pitcher slash starting pitcher for the 1950 Whiz Kids, won the MVP award. And then you had Chuck Klein, who won the MVP in 1932. So elite company Bryce Harper finds himself in. Not many of those guys end up winning MVP awards if you wear a Phillies uniform. And Bryce Harper is on his way to cementing himself as one of the franchise's all-time greats. I mean, I think we kind of knew that it could go that way. And when they signed him to that 13-year deal, you were hoping that you would get some elite seasons out of him. But I wasn't sure based off of his 2019, which was good. His 2019 was good. And then, of course, you had the pandemic-shortened 2020 season, which was just everybody was out of whack for that. But I think in 2019, we mentioned this that year, that Bryce Harper got off to a really slow start. And I think you have to factor in the fact that he was coming to a new team. The free agency dance that he did lasted into spring training. The distractions that came from moving to a new franchise, suddenly being the face of that franchise, and all of the publicity that went along with that clearly took its toll. His wife was also pregnant with their first child, and they're moving across country from Las Vegas to Philadelphia. And they were based in D.C. during the season because of playing with the Nationals, but it still was a big change. All of that factored into Bryce Harper getting off to a slow start in 2019, and we said as much. We said that on multiple occasions, and last year, again, was just weird. This year, let's not overlook the fact that the guy got hit in the face with a fastball this year that put him out of commission for a few weeks. He wasn't effective when he came back, and then had to hit the disabled list again until he was finally ready to come back, and then was on fire the entire season. He didn't slump. Outside of getting hit in the face by a pitch, he didn't slump this year, which is really incredible. So this is one of the 4 or 5 best offensive seasons that any Phillies player has ever had, and it seemed clear, too, that as the month of September rolled along, that Tatis Jr. was not going to win the MVP. It didn't seem like Juan Soto had done quite enough to overtake Bryce Harper. Once that narrative gets going, it's just really hard to kind of slow it down. And the narrative was going for Bryce Harper at that point. Once Tatis Jr. kind of faded into the background, it kind of became Bryce Harper's to lose. And he did not lose it. Bryce Harper managed to make it to the finish line and win the MVP. There were some interesting ballots. And I've got to say Jim Salisbury's ballot was interesting. I think he had Juan Soto in the number in 7th place, and you got to believe maybe that was a strategic vote to try and make sure Bryce Harper won the MVP. An interesting decision there. I mean, if that was a sincere selection, thinking that Juan Soto was seventh, I have to wholeheartedly disagree with my friend, but I think what we were doing there was trying to make sure Juan Soto didn't get enough points by getting another second place finish, because most people thought the vote might be a little bit closer, but as it turns out, Harper won this thing pretty simply. You look at Bryce Harper, he is on a Hall of Fame track at this point. You win two MVP awards, you've already got basically one foot in. And it's one of the reasons why I think Dale Murphy should be in the Hall of Fame. He was one of the top players in the National League for a 10-year period, one of the top two or three players in the National League for about 10 years. And to me, that's a Hall of Famer. I don't necessarily need to have a guy do it for 15 or 20 years. And you look at Bryce Harper's resume, after 10 major league seasons, he has 1,273 hits. So he might not get to 3,000 hits, but that's okay. Mike Schmidt didn't get to 3,000 hits either. He's got 267 homers. He has a 916 career OPS, a 142 career OPS plus. He's been to the All-Star game six times and won two MVP awards. And here's what I'm going to say about Bryce Harper at this point. John Middleton has to do whatever is necessary to get this guy to the World Series. Whatever you and Dave Dombrowski have to do so that you don't waste any more of Bryce Harper's prime, it has to be done. I keep saying that I'll believe that this team goes over the luxury tax when they actually do. It's criminal that you have one of the best offensive seasons in Philly's history, and the best you can do is 82 wins. It's not right. I mean, it's a waste. You're wasting this money that you're paying Bryce Harper by falling short. This should be a kick in the pants. To spend, do whatever you have to do to get Bryce Harper to the World Series. I really don't understand how you can own this baseball team and not see it that way. I just don't. It's not my money. 100% understand that. But I don't get it. I mean, this is a guy you signed to a 13-year, $330 million deal. Okay? I don't understand how anything short of the postseason is acceptable at this point. You got to do whatever you got to do. You have to do whatever you have to do. You have to do whatever you have to do to get Bryce Harper back into the playoffs, because he's been in the league 10 years. He's never even come close to a World Series. He's never even been to an NLCS. He's never won a round in the playoffs. I mean, it's crazy. It's kind of like Mike Trout. You know, you've got these two guys who just have never seen the postseason, really. Harper's been in a couple times. He's been there a couple times, obviously, with the Nationals, but they never got anywhere. And now he's had three seasons in Philadelphia where he's exceeded expectations. And they have nothing to show for it just yet. So they have to do whatever they need to do to get Bryce Harper into the World Series. Get him to the playoffs and give your team a real shot. Because it's criminal that they're wasting prime Bryce Harper like this. But we'll continue to talk about that as the offseason goes along. But Bryce Harper is the National League MVP. By the way, Shohei Ohtani was the unanimous winner in the American League, and rightfully so. Shohei Ohtani, as my preseason prediction, as you heard me and Justin talk about it, our preseason prediction was Shohei Ohtani. I'm still not sure exactly why we both felt the way we felt, but we both kind of felt, I think, that Shohei Ohtani was going to be healthy, and if he was, that he was going to have a dominant season, and that's exactly what happened. So congrats to Shohei Ohtani as well. All right, let's move over to the National League Cy Young Award, and this was a much closer vote. As you know now, Corbin Burnes beat out Zach Wheeler by 10 points. Both guys finished with 12 first-place votes, but Burnes just had a little bit more down-ballot support, a little bit more second- and third-place votes. And what's really happened now because of this vote is you have more of the analytics versus traditionalist argument that's going on. I think we look back at when Felix Hernandez won the Cy Young Award a few years ago with a 13-12 record or whatever it was, or maybe it was a losing record. I don't remember, but he was so dominant that for the first time, the baseball writers overlooked wins as a statistic for voting for the Cy Young Award. It was kind of a watershed moment for baseball writers to realize, yeah, we got to stop looking at wins, because Hernandez was so dominant, you had to give him the award, despite the one-loss record. So we kind of throw wins out the window now when we're talking about pitchers and their effectiveness, and that's all great. And we have so many statistics out there now, so many advanced stats, so many rate stats out there. We've got so many great websites that are diving into things. We've got StatCast, we've got Fangraphs, we've got Baseball Reference, we've got Baseball Prospectus that really can break down everything that a pitcher does and give us numbers for it. Now, there's so many things out there that it's really hard to get a handle on what the best stuff is. There's like three different versions of WAR. You've got all the StatCast stuff. You've got all the spin rate stuff, the hard hit balls, the barrels, and all that kind of stuff. It's hard to know exactly what to go with. And it seems as though in this case, Zach Wheeler was penalized because he pitched more innings than Corbin Burns. Their overall numbers were pretty close. But Corbin Burns had a ridiculous fielding independent pitching, which is a number that factors in. It strips out basically everything that isn't strikeouts, everything other than strikeouts, walks, and home runs, and takes a look at what a pitch, because it basically says there's so much that a pitcher does that's out of his control. So yes, you don't just look at ERA anymore and say, oh, that's your best pitcher. Although ERA, I think, is still a good measure of judging whether or not a pitcher has had a good season. Runs on average per nine innings is probably a better one, but it's close, right? You know, it's basically the same thing. A starting pitcher, his ERA will get affected when a relief pitcher allows inherited runners to score. So if you're a starting pitcher that has a better bullpen, you might have a lower ERA because a relief pitcher who's relieving you might allow fewer of your inherited runners to score, which will keep your ERA lower. It's one of the reasons why ERA is not perfect. But what we're seeing here is that Zach Wheeler pitched deeper into games, made more starts than Corbin Burns, and had to face more lineups a third time through because the Phillies had a terrible bullpen. They needed Zach Wheeler to pitch to hitters a third time through the order because it was a better option than going to Jose Alvarado or Sam Coonrod in the seventh inning or the eighth inning. Whereas Corbin Burns had the luxury of a great bullpen in Milwaukee that they could take him out after six innings every time out there. They also had him in a six-man rotation for much of the season. And that's smart. The Brewers were smart to do that. It's not Corbin Burns' fault, but it should have been more taken into account by Cy Young voters. And I think we need to really shift our thinking and start to value innings pitched and outs, right? I mean, here's the argument here. Wheeler pitched 213 and a third innings this year. Corbin Burns pitched 167. So there were 19 big league starters pitched more innings than Corbin Burns this year. 19 of them. Wheeler got, this is an amazing stat from Paul Hembekides. Wheeler got 139 more outs than Corbin Burns did this year. That's more than five full games worth of outs, guys. Five full games worth of outs more than Corbin Burns. And Wheeler's numbers were still great. It's not like he finished with a 3.2 ERA. He had a BWAR, a baseball wins above baseball reference wins above replacement of 7.6. He led the league in strikeouts with 247. Finished second in Fangraphs wins above replacement at 7.3. Was second best in FIP at 2.59 and second best in expected ERA at 2.78. He pitched an average of 6.6 innings per start, which means he pitched into the seventh inning on average every time out. Burns averaged 5.96 innings per start while making fewer starts. And this was the stat that Jason Stark noted that I've mentioned a couple of different times. If Wheeler, Burns, and Scherzer, all of them, never threw a pitch after the sixth inning, Wheeler's ERA would have been 2.32, better than Burns' 2.34 and Scherzer's 2.60. Now, this isn't to say Burns wasn't deserving. It was a tough decision, I'm sure. He was the MLB leader in ERA in strikeout rate, 35.6% strikeout rate. Strikeout-to-walk ratio, he had an insane 1.63 FIP and a 2.9% barrel rate that was best in baseball. By the way, the 1.63 FIP, second lowest in the divisional era, with only Pedro Martinez 1.39 in 1999 lower. But Wheeler was penalized for making more starts and pitching more innings and pitching deeper into games. And I think that shouldn't be. I mean, this was a close vote for a reason. These two guys were both really good this year. But I think Wheeler did more for his team than Burns had to do for his team. Wheeler was asked to do more, And the statistics based out of that were close enough that I think the extra innings and the extra outs and the bullpen usage saved by Wheeler made him a more deserving Cy Young Award winner than Corbin Burns. I don't think, and you know, this is not a Phillies homerism thing. There are other national writers out there saying the same stuff. Jeff Passan from ESPN, one of the chief guys among us. But this has kind of launched a whole analytical debate. Well, what's better? Is it innings pitched or is it fielding independent pitching and the barrel rate and all that kind of stuff? Well, let's not forget about the fact Wheeler had really good stuff, you know, really good rate stats too. Elite rate stats too. But when you couple the fact that he pitched more innings than anyone and was still able to generate that kind of, like, if, and I'll say this too, if Burns was at like 190 innings and Wheeler was at like 219, that would be one thing. If there was a difference of like 20 innings, that's one thing. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking like 45 innings, 139 more outs. That's not a small gap. That's a chasm. So I think the MLB writers, it was a close race. I give them credit. I think what we're seeing is, listen, people get upset about this argument, about having art. This is what makes sports fun. This is why we watch sports. So we can sit around as sports fans and debate this kind of stuff. Because there's an argument to be made for Corbin Burns. I get the argument to be made for Corbin Burns. It's a good one. I think the argument for Wheeler is stronger. But I get annoyed when people's like, why, you know, why can't we just admit they were both good? Well, no, this is the fun of sports. This is what we debate: who's the best quarterback of all time. We debate who's elite. We debate who should the MVP be. We debate who should be in the Hall of Fame. As long as we don't take it personally, it's just sports. It's not business. It's fun. I think everybody needs to lighten up with this kind of stuff. This is a fascinating discussion. It's an interesting place we're in right now in baseball. You know, there's a real push-pull. There's a real tug and push over analytics and some of the traditional stuff. And I think if you'd have allowed pitchers to vote for the Cy Young Award, I'll bet you they would have given it to Zach Wheeler over Corbin Burns. Because I think pitchers know how valuable it is to have a guy go out there and throw innings. I mean, I wonder if they'd have had this vote after the playoffs, when we heard so much hand-wringing over starters not going deep into games and pulling guys after five innings and bullpen games and all the rest that starters were getting because they didn't want him to go. That was the hue and cry. I'll bet you Wheeler might win that thing. If you'd convince just a couple of voters to change to flip-flop their votes, Wheeler wins. So I think we're at a very interesting point here. I think this could be a Cy Young race we look back on, and we see how future Cy Young races turn out, and we can look back on this one and say, did they get that one right? Did they get that one wrong? Should we be valuing durability and innings as much as we value barrel rate and fielding independent pitching? I think we should. And I think it's a discussion that we should be having in baseball because it's fun. It's a fun discussion and it's good stuff. And I get annoyed when people start to get all uppity about it. And we can argue about that kind of stuff. This is what sports is all about. It's about arguing about this kind of stuff. And it's cool and it's fun. So everybody needs to just relax. And one last thing I'll say about both of these guys, Zach Wheeler and Bryce Harper. These two guys could go down as the greatest free agent signings in team history. I think there are a handful that you can look at right now. I think, obviously, Pete Rose, when the Phillies signed him ahead of the 1979 season, they didn't go to the World Series or the playoffs in 79 because of injuries, but in 1980, Pete Rose was instrumental in them finally getting over the hump. And I think he is often regarded as maybe the best free agent ever signed in Phillies history. But Jim Thome, he was only here for a couple of years, but he changed. I think Jim Thome is what got Citizens Bank Park built. Honestly, I mean, I know it was already in the works and maybe it was going to happen, but when they got Jim Thome, baseball came back to Philadelphia and he reinvigorated the fan base to fall in love with baseball again after the strike and after all those awful Phillies teams in the 90s and those frustrating teams in the early 2000s. Jim Thome is what brought baseball back to Philadelphia. So, and he was also incredibly productive in the couple of seasons that he was here. But if you just look at the sheer production that the Phillies have gotten out of Zach Wheeler over these last couple of years and Bryce Harper over these last 3 years, it's hard to argue that these aren't the two best free agent signings in team history. They are getting all they could have hoped for. Zach Wheeler has worked out better than Matt Klintak's wildest dreams could have hoped for. And Bryce Harper, you were hoping that he had another MVP season in him when you signed him to this deal. And he did. He had it this year. He may have more. He's still young. He still has the potential for a few more elite seasons in him. I don't know that we should expect another season like this moving forward. That's probably a little unfair to him to expect it. But it's not reasonable. It's not unreasonable to hope there will be another one and to think that there's a very good chance that there could be, because he is that good. And I think these two guys could very well go down as the greatest free agent signings in Phillies history. I mean, the Phillies have done pretty well with free agent signings and trades for big players over these last few years. They've done a pretty good job for the most part. It's developing players, the younger guys that they've really had an issue with. But when you think about all the options that were out there for Zach instead of Zach Wheeler, and remember, I was not happy when Zach Wheeler was the main addition because I didn't think he would be quite good enough. I wasn't convinced he would become a true ace starter. Well, guess what? He has reached the ceiling that we all thought was pie in the sky. And we had the pie this year, and he should have won the Cy Young Award because of it. And Bryce Harper turned in another season like he had in 2015. Not quite as good, but almost, and certainly the best in the National League. So it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out over the next 4 or 5 years, but I think right now we are going to talk about, my prediction is that when all is said and done with these two guys, we'll be talking about them as the two best free agent signings in franchise history. All right, folks, look, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Thank you all for checking out the podcast today. I know some big news with Harper getting the MVP and Zach Wheeler coming so close to winning the Cy Young. Really interesting stuff, and hope you tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed. Tell them around Apple Podcasts. Have them leave a 5-star rating and a review if they haven't done so already. And if you haven't, I would appreciate that also. Don't forget to also check out our Hittin' Season Patreon. We got a lot of good stuff up there, too. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. Some bonus content for you there. If you sign up on one of the tiers, you won't go away sad, I guarantee it. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.